Welcome back to SpaceX Daily, everyone. Today, we're diving deep into the latest news surrounding Starship's highly anticipated fifth test flight. We're joined by space industry expert John Starlink to break it all down. John, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Sarah. It's an exciting time to be following Starship's development, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Now, the big news is that SpaceX is aiming for October 13th for this launch, which seems incredibly ambitious considering the FAA's previous statements. What's your take on this timeline, John?
It's definitely a bold move by SpaceX. Remember, just last month, the FAA indicated that the launch license decision wouldn't come before late November. This suggests SpaceX is pushing hard and perhaps seeing some positive signals from the regulatory side. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out in the coming days.
It certainly will. SpaceX has been quite vocal about their frustrations with the FAA's regulatory process, even going as far as publicly criticizing them for what they call superfluous environmental analysis. Do you think this public pressure is influencing the FAA's decision-making?
It's hard to say for certain, Sarah. The FAA has a responsibility to ensure public safety, and launching a rocket as powerful as Starship comes with inherent risks. However, SpaceX has also raised valid points about the need for a streamlined regulatory environment to foster innovation in the commercial space industry. This push and pull between SpaceX and the FAA highlights a larger conversation about balancing safety with progress in space exploration.
That's a great point, John. It's a delicate balance, and one that's becoming increasingly important as the private space industry continues to grow. Now let's talk about the technical goals for this fifth test flight. SpaceX is aiming for some pretty impressive milestones, including the first ever return of the Super Heavy booster to the launch site and a catch attempt using the chopstick arms on the launch tower. What are the biggest challenges associated with these maneuvers, and what kind of impact would a successful attempt have on Starship's development?
You're right. The technical ambitions for this flight are huge. The booster catch, if successful, would be a game changer for SpaceX. It would demonstrate a key aspect of Starship's reusability, which is crucial for reducing costs and increasing launch cadence. But achieving this is incredibly complex. Imagine a skyscraper-sized booster returning from space at supersonic speeds, needing to be precisely guided onto the launch tower's arms. It requires incredibly precise control and coordination between the booster's engines, grid fins, and the launch tower's systems.
It sounds like something straight out of science fiction, honestly.
It does, doesn't it? And the risks are high. If something goes wrong during the catch attempt, it could damage the booster, the launch tower, or both, potentially setting back Starship's development significantly. But the potential rewards are enormous. A successful catch would be a major validation of SpaceX's approach to reusability and could accelerate Starship's path towards operational flights.
Speaking of Elon Musk and making headlines, let's discuss the recent news surrounding Starlink's offer of free service to victims of Hurricane Helene. What are your thoughts on this, John? Philanthropy or shrewd marketing?
Well, Sarah, it certainly generated a lot of buzz, but the reality is a bit more nuanced than a simple act of charity. While offering a free month of Starlink might sound generous on the surface, requiring people to purchase the dish and automatically enrolling them in a monthly contract afterward feels a bit like a bait and switch, especially for communities struggling to recover from a natural disaster.
Exactly. The Register's investigation highlighted this, pointing out that if someone has enough connectivity to order Starlink in the first place, they probably don't need it weeks later when the dish arrives. It seems like a solution for a problem that might not even exist by the time Starlink is up and running for these users.
Right, and let's not forget the practical considerations. Many areas hit by Helene are facing power outages. A Starlink dish without a generator is about as useful as a chocolate teapot in that situation. It's crucial to remember that access to reliable power is just as important as the communication technology itself, especially in disaster recovery.
Absolutely. It raises questions about whether this offer was truly designed to provide immediate assistance or more about capitalizing on a disaster for publicity and customer acquisition. This isn't the first time Musk has made grand gestures during emergencies, only for them to fall short upon closer examination.
Indeed, the submarine incident in Thailand and the ventilator situation during the early days of COVID come to mind. These instances highlight the importance of not just offering help, but offering help that's actually helpful and practical in the given context.
Well said, John. It's a good reminder that effective disaster relief requires careful consideration, genuine practicality, and perhaps a bit less fanfare. Speaking of scrutiny, John, let's move on to another interesting development. The FCC is proposing a change that could force Starlink to reveal its total network capacity, something SpaceX is pushing back against. What's your take on this?
This is a classic case of transparency versus competitive intelligence, Sarah. On one hand, the FCC has a point. Their broadband maps need to be accurate, and right now they might be overestimating Starlink's availability. Knowing the actual capacity could give them a clearer picture.
Right, especially when you consider the reports of congestion and slowdowns in some areas. If Starlink's capacity is already stretched in certain regions, it raises questions about how much they can realistically offer.
Exactly. But on the flip side, SpaceX argues that this data is commercially sensitive. Revealing it could tip their hand to competitors, especially those trying to catch up in the satellite broadband race.
And they do have a point about the dynamic nature of their network. With new satellites launching constantly, any snapshot of capacity could be outdated pretty quickly.
Precisely. It's a moving target. However, I think the FCC's request for state-by-state data is particularly relevant. This granular information could be crucial in identifying areas where Starlink's advertised speeds might not match reality due to capacity limitations.
That's a great point, John. It would also provide valuable insights into the digital divide and highlight regions where alternative broadband solutions might be necessary.
Absolutely. It's a complex issue with valid arguments on both sides. It'll be interesting to see how the FCC balances the need for transparency with the potential impact on competition in the satellite broadband market.
Speaking of exciting developments, let's shift gears to the International Space Station. Crew 8's return to Earth is shaping up to be quite the nail-biter.
Indeed, Sarah. The delays due to Hurricane Milton are a stark reminder of the crucial role weather plays in spaceflight, even during the final stages of a mission.
Absolutely. It's a testament to the meticulous planning and safety precautions that NASA and SpaceX prioritize. After all, splashing down off the coast of Florida in the middle of a hurricane is not exactly ideal.
Not at all. And speaking of meticulous planning, the overlap between Crew 8 and Crew 9 on the ISS is fascinating. It highlights the increasing frequency and efficiency of crew rotations.
It's like a well-choreographed cosmic dance. While Crew 8 is wrapping up their experiments, Crew 9 is already settling in and preparing for their own scientific endeavors. And let's not forget about the veteran astronauts, Wilmore and Williams, hitching a ride back with Crew 9. Talk about a reunion in space.
Their return on a Crew Dragon instead of a Soyuz is also symbolic of the shifting landscape of space travel. It underscores the growing reliance on commercial partners like SpaceX for human spaceflight.
Absolutely. And the fact that they've already tested their SpaceX suits and are good to go speaks volumes about the adaptability and collaboration required in today's space exploration landscape. Speaking of shifting landscapes, John, Starlink's been making headlines again with their pricing strategy for their satellite dishes. A new base price, but with some interesting regional variations.
Right, Sarah. It seems SpaceX is trying to balance supply and demand, quite literally, with this new approach. They're calling it a congestion charge, essentially a $100 premium on the standard $349 dish price in areas where the network is already feeling the strain.
So if you're in Texas or Florida, for instance, where Starlink is already quite popular, you're looking at a higher upfront cost. Interesting tactic, wouldn't you say?
It is. It's a classic case of dynamic pricing, used in many industries, but applying it to satellite internet access is pretty novel. On the flip side, they're offering a $100 discount in regions with abundant network availability. So, depending on your location, you might snag a bargain.
A regional savings program, they call it. Clever marketing, I'll give them that, But it does raise the question, John, is this a sustainable long-term strategy?
That's the million-dollar question, Sarah. On one hand, it allows them to manage network load and incentivize adoption in less congested areas. But it also creates a two-tiered system, potentially raising concerns about fairness and access down the line.
It's fascinating to see how quickly technology is changing the way we live and work. I mean, who would have thought, even a few years ago, that we could be having this conversation about high-speed internet on cruise ships in the middle of the ocean? It's incredible.
It is pretty mind-blowing, Sarah. And it's not just about checking emails or posting vacation photos anymore. We're talking about reliable, high-speed connectivity that allows people to work remotely, even from a cruise ship in the North Atlantic, as that author you mentioned experienced.
Exactly. And it seems like cruise lines are fully embracing this shift. Royal Caribbean going all in on Starlink across their fleet is a pretty big deal.
It's a smart move. They recognize that seamless connectivity is no longer a luxury, but an expectation, especially for digital nomads and remote workers. It opens up a whole new demographic for the cruise industry.
Absolutely. And this trend of live, work, and play anywhere is really taking off. The Storylines MV narrative residential ship is a perfect example of that. It's like a floating WeWork for people who want to travel the world while staying connected to their work.
It's a fascinating concept. Imagine having all the amenities of a luxury cruise ship, restaurants, gyms, theaters, but also dedicated workspaces, meeting rooms, even a recording studio. It's like a dream come true for many entrepreneurs and remote workers.
But it's not all smooth sailing, is it? The article mentions some challenges with privacy and finding suitable workspaces on traditional cruise ships. It sounds like there's still some catching up to do in terms of infrastructure.
Right. Working from a cruise ship lounge with spotty Wi-Fi and constant distractions isn't ideal. But that's where companies like Storylines are trying to differentiate themselves by designing spaces specifically for remote work.
It'll be interesting to see how this all evolves. Will we see more cruise lines catering to digital nomads? Will dedicated workspaces become the norm on cruise ships? And what about the implications for work-life balance when your office is a floating paradise? Well, John, it seems Elon Musk is back in the headlines, and not for launching rockets this time. This Politico article paints a pretty concerning picture of his relationship with the government, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, Sarah. It's a tangled web, that's for sure. On one hand, Musk's companies, SpaceX and Tesla, are heavily reliant on government contracts, raking in billions of dollars. On the other hand, he seems to have no qualms about publicly criticizing and even undermining the very administration that's bankrolling him.
It's a bizarre situation, and one that raises serious questions about hypocrisy and accountability. I mean, joking about the potential assassination of the vice president while simultaneously benefiting from government contracts? That's a whole new level of audacity.
Right? And it's not just the morally questionable aspect. There's a real national security concern here. Musk holds a security clearance through SpaceX, giving him access to sensitive information. How can we be sure his loyalties lie with the United States when he's actively campaigning against its leaders and cozying up to figures like Tucker Carlson?
It's a valid concern, especially considering the current political climate. The article highlights the stark contrast between Biden's approach, seemingly prioritizing national interest over personal feelings, and Trump's more vindictive style. Remember his threats to pull out of NATO or withhold aid from California because it's a blue state?
Exactly. And let's not forget Trump's allies already hinting at potential retaliation against companies like Deloitte should he return to office. It creates a chilling effect, making businesses hesitant to speak out against those in power for fear of retribution.
It seems we're stuck in a vicious cycle of political gamesmanship, where personal vendettas and political point scoring take precedence over national interests. And unfortunately, individuals like Elon Musk, with their wealth and influence, have the power to further exacerbate these divisions.
It's a worrying trend, no doubt, and it highlights the urgent need for greater transparency and accountability, both from our elected officials and the corporations that hold so much sway in our society. Otherwise, we risk further eroding public trust and jeopardizing the very fabric of our democracy.
Well said, John. This episode has certainly given our listeners a lot to chew on, from the ethical dilemmas surrounding billionaires wielding political influence to the very real consequences of unchecked corporate power. It's clear that the intersection of technology, politics, and wealth will continue to shape our future in profound ways, and it's up to us, as informed citizens, to demand better from those in power. That's all the time we have for today's show. Thanks for joining us, John, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in. This is Sarah Starship, signing off on SpaceX Daily.